1, 2, 3.
Listen.
Like building into a slow, like slowly building calories up, slowly refilling glycogen. I refer it to being like a bucket. You're kind of depleted and low, and you're slowly trying to like build up. And what happens then is also your training goes better. So you maybe regain some muscle tissue, your glycogen levels a bit bigger and higher. So your kind of pumps are better, your training performance is better, you look better, and you can kind of get to this point where you're kind of edging your metabolism back up almost. It's like a reverse diet during your contest prep almost. So it's like an ideal way to do it where you're just slowly building yourself up to maintenance or even like hovering around maintenance. But like you said, you can only do this if you get ready early. So if you do plan in an extra 5 weeks, maybe you'll need them to get that lean, or maybe you'll get lean 5 weeks earlier. Now you can go into this kind of metabolic building phase. I think he called it that. I think Alberto Nunez has called it like a bodybuilding taper. So think of people think of powerlifting tapers where you kind of make things easier as you lead into the powerlifting meet to reduce fatigue and feel better and perform better. It's kind of like that for a bodybuilder. Our fatigue is like glycogen depletion, low metabolic rate. And so by increasing calories, specifically carbohydrates, glycogen stores are higher, metabolic rate increases. We look better and better and better.
Moin moin from Hamburg. Welcome to the Art of Personal Training. Today, a rare episode in English. So bear with me. Yeah, every time I get a guest from the US or the UK, I apologize in advance since talking English. I do it once a week for my check-in. Most of the time.
All right, yeah.
Just once a week. So Steve know how my English is.
It's great. Your English is really good on it. Yeah. Like, okay. It's funny that I've seen, I think it was like a reel or like a meme. It was like when kind of Europeans or whatever speak English and like speak perfect English and they're like, sorry, my English is really bad.
Okay.
And it's like pristine. And then an English person tries to speak European, it's just awful. And they're just like, poor, like, guten Tag, like, okay. No effort.
in that comparison, what I always compare my German English is to like when people from Sweden or Denmark talk English, it's like, for me, that sounds like top notch, like perfect.
You remember Charles?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. His English, just, I think he even got like tutored for it though. So
yeah,
it's a bit of an unfair advantage. Yeah, I think he did. I think he did. He'd have to confirm. He maybe listens. I don't know. I haven't spoken to
probably,
him.
Probably. So he's, he's a podcast subscriber, I guess. He was on the podcast one time.
Yeah, okay.
Cool. I had him as a guest one time, not too long ago.
Great guy. Sure.
So, as you all hear now, our guest, Steve Hall, is back into the show. I looked back like January 2019, we had a show together where we're talking about higher gaining rates and maintenance phases. So it's been a while. So Steve is an online coach, natural bodybuilder, fantastic content creator when it comes to science-guided training and nutrition. I guess that's what Steve is doing. Did I forget something? I always ask that. Something that
I want to say something funny now. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, you got a light sword from Star Wars.
I have a lightsaber right here.
Lightsaber,
it's off
yeah.
at the moment.
Okay.
Because it's just dangerous to leave it on in the background, you know. Could burn through the wall.
it's an original one.
I've got the orange saber, which is unique to Revive Stronger. There's no one has orange.
Okay.
There's the purple, the red, blue, and green. No one has orange. Is I think like a mix of good and evil.
All right, sounds good. Sounds reasonable. Two faces.
Yeah, I'm a geek. There you go. You get the Star Wars reference.
Now we got that out of the way. Since what's the other stuff? You represented me in a feedback video. Dragon Ball Z. Is that right?
Dragon Ball. Yeah, I love Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball Z. All of that. I'm a bit obsessed. I end up getting like I don't know if this is a trait of bodybuilders. I don't know if you have this, Arne, but like if I go into something, I'm like all in. And then yeah, I'm just like obsessed to watch everything, learn everything about it. So yeah, I end up, it becomes my identity a little bit.
Yes, it looked good. And you ask if I am familiar with it. Not one millimeter. I don't know nothing about that. And I have to say I'm fucking old now. I'm cursing on the podcast sometimes. I'm very old, and then that's not.
How old are you, Arne?
38 now.
No.
Yeah, 38.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I did not think you were that old.
Well, most of the people say that. So
I literally thought you were like, don't know, late 20s or something.
It's all a lot of water, a lot of sleep.
What's your secret? We need to know. Screw the interview talking to me. People need to know how they get a decade of their life back.
I have really no clue. Stay calm all the time. Chill a lot. I'm a chilled person. I don't know. Normally, I should look like I'm how old I am, since I was partying when between 18 and let's say 23. I was partying like 5 years straight, from Friday, Saturday, and partying and stuff. So
yeah, I would, you got out of your system.
Younger. Yeah.
I'm jealous of the hairline, everything. You've kept it all together. It's like there's no part of you that looks, no wrinkles. Damn. Perfect. You have good genetics.
Yeah. So that's why, that's the reason why we're here together talk about prepping. In Germany, I almost can start in the master's class at 40, I guess.
Oh, wow.
When you're 40, yeah. You can start in the master's class. So I wanted to get that out of the way this year. So I can kill the masters in 3 years or 2 years. No. If we are prepping again, then you can start in both classes, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's far ahead. Let's talk about stuff that's in the near future. This year in prepping. First of all, how is it going in the UK? How do you enjoy every training session in the gym?
Yeah, it's hilarious. I think because I was like. Just saying, last week I'd been to the gym because I split my sessions into two, and I'd been to the gym in like 6 days, 12 times. It's just like, if someone heard that, I'd be like, you've really been missing the gym, haven't you? It's just like, yeah, just a little bit. But it, in all honesty, I think the biggest thing for me, there are some bits of machines I was really missing, like hack squats, leg curl machine. Like, I kind of wish I'd bought the one that you have, even if it's not as good as in the gym. Mm. It beats doing cuffed leg curls and stuff like this I was doing. I just realized I was not getting much of a stimulus from those like I do from the gym. But it's just not the atmosphere per se. It's not having, like, you can see it behind me as well. This is where we work. And then having to train in the same place as you work, it's just not fun. It's super demotivating. I think it just, whilst I put in just as much effort training from home, I think it took more effort to put in that effort, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I didn't kind of half-ass it here, but it was just harder to put in the same effort as going into the gym where, I don't know, everyone's working out. You just jump in a rack and it's pre all set up for you. You don't have to worry about anything. So yeah, it's just nice knowing that the world, like, I don't know, not the world, but the rest of like London is, I don't know, there's people outdoors, is like, it just feels, and summer's kind of coming around, so the weather's improved as well, which kind of helps everyone's mood. So yeah, we're lucky that our like non-essential shops are open, restaurants and bars, you can sit outside and have food and drink. And then the gyms have opened as well. And like hairdressers have opened, which is, it's always nice having your hair cut. So yeah, things are getting a bit more normal here, which is good.
Sounds so refreshing and so much more like, yeah, freedom.
Yeah, a lot more, that's freedom. Essentially it.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. Yeah, enjoy every moment. Hopefully that stays forever.
Yeah,
way. Yeah, for sure. If I look in your background, the last time we were in the first lockdown in Germany, after like 3 weeks, gyms were open. I packed all my stuff Yeah, and put it in another room and store it there and set in my Instagram story. That's it. I'm done with that. No, we'll never use that again. And here we are training like, I don't know, which month, 6 months in a row. Yeah, probably 6 months in a row. But yeah, everything will change. It's a matter of time. So let's hang in there here in Germany for all the German listeners. Yeah, for contest prep, that's why this format is about. I just called it the prep series, nothing special. When we are going into that, long-term contest planning, like years ahead. To get a little, give the listeners a little bit perspective, we started working at the end of 2018, I guess.
Yeah.
With the vision for this contest prep. That's like 2.5 years almost. So what's your perspective in planning ahead?
Yeah.
Getting a coach, what would your perfect scenario, if you can outline that?
Yeah, it's crazy to think we've been working together that long and it's all kind of coming to the floor now, because I don't know, I think it's easy and you can get carried away with, I don't know. I remember, I always bring this up because I can remember it vividly with Matt Ogus when he was looking to go pro at some stage. He would film his like vlogs and he would write, like he'd always say, like, I don't know, he'd write on his whiteboard this many days until I go pro or something along those lines. Like it was like his affirmation every day. I think that can be great, but not too far away, because then you end up getting into this like, am I there yet syndrome, and everything is like every day you're like, am I there yet? Am I there yet? So when you have such a long period of time, like there's no point us planning backwards from like now, especially you think what happened last year, like, or even now what's happening, like it's just impossible to plan that far away. So there's no point us doing that. It was just a case of doing normal bodybuilding style stuff, keep you in a level of body fat where you felt productive, you felt well, you weren't too far away from like a decent condition, and just cycling between kind of massing as much as possible, controlling that, which you do a fantastic job with your nutrition. Some people don't, but you do a great job. So we maximize as much time in kind of gaining. And then we have intermittent, maybe mini cuts, then longer cuts, give us a bit of an idea of, okay, where are we? How's kind of the progress going? And then eventually when you're maybe, I think you can probably do it from a year out or somewhere between like 8 to 12 months out, you can start planning back from show dates. So the way we've set it up, we ended up kind of having a kind of an initial diet before the diet, you might call it, where you're just taking off that cyber fat that's relatively comfortable. It's kind of that whole fat loss phase should kind of be like a honeymoon diet where it's like, it's the fun part. It's like easy. Like it shouldn't be super difficult. Towards the end, probably gets a bit challenging and a bit tiring because you're working towards the end of like close to the lower end of your body fat settling point where you're starting to feel like, oh, if I dig below this, it's going to start biting. And then we've had an extended period away from that to really allow you to feel much recovered from it. So we don't have as much metabolic slowdown, you're on more food. So then we can kind of come into prep. And I think it's something I've definitely done is had just really long preps that were like 40 weeks. And it just becomes very tiring quite quickly. Whereas if you can be like, 40 weeks thinking you're in prep is a long time. Whereas you've got a much shorter period of time where you're like, I'm in prep now. And I can actually say I'm in prep now and I can commit and I can be a bit more kind of isolated and selfish and give more to this right now because it's shorter. Whereas when it's that long, you're kind of like, I've got so much time. Like, I don't want to think I'm in prep there. So I really like that approach of getting you kind of in shooting range of a contest condition, allowing you to feel good there and then kind of dig into things. But like you said, you can only do that if you've got someone at least like 8 to 12 months out, whereas some people might reach out to you like a couple of months out. And it's like, I don't know, it's very rare that you'll get someone who's actually in a position you could take on and take them well to stage. So the more time you can have, and you probably would agree this as well, Arnie, with your clients, like the more time you can have them before they're looking to compete, the better you can get to know them. A large part of coaching, which I don't think many people necessarily know unless they're a coach or unless they've had a coach, is not necessarily that person's expertise. Like, that's part of it, but there's so much knowledge out there for free that you can know everything. It's about applying it, but then also building rapport with that person and understanding them, how they tick, what's going on in their life. Whereas if you have a short relationship with someone, you might not know how to kind of communicate effectively with them. You might not know if you should be pushing them harder or pulling back. You might not know if they can even take it and handle it. You don't know what's going on the rest of their life because you just haven't had that time to develop that relationship. And I think that's where true coaching comes in, where you actually are good at communicating, building rapport. You have empathy with that individual. So yeah, the more time, the better. But like 8 to 12 months is great. If you can have even more time than that, amazing. If it's less than that, it's a tricky situation where it could work for some individuals, but others, it really won't work. And I think from my perspective as a coach, I don't really enjoy coaching people like for just like literally, I don't know, their 4 months of contest prep. It's like, I don't really get to know them and like interact with them and feel like I'm getting the best from them. It's just like, I'm just getting you in a calorie deficit and keeping you adherent to it, which I mean, there's coaching involved with that, but it's just not as enjoyable. And you don't feel as much kind of, I guess, satisfaction from their whatever they do on stage and what their result is. So yeah, hopefully I kind of went on a tangent with, I think, but hopefully I kind of answered that question.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah, that's why you're here. yeah, I completely agree. I always think about coaching relationships like a good wine. Yeah, it's getting better over time. Yeah.
And that's a good analogy.
Yeah, that's why I reached out to you like 2.5 years ago when I thought about competing, transferring from men's physique to bodybuilding, which was for me is a big step. Just in my head, stepping from board shorts to classic real bodybuilding, and for me that was a goal like that's up in the skies for me. Completely. Now it's not up in the skies, but yeah, it still scares me a little bit till this day, especially with posing and stuff. We talked about that. We're working on that. So real quick, back to the length of contest prep. So you said that you're now more on the side like we are prepping now 30 weeks, I guess. Would you consider that like a medium time for contest prep when 40 to, I don't know, Jeff Alwitz, did he had 1 year of prep once in the last years?
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. In my opinion, completely individual for sure on which, where you're standing. But yeah, as you said, 30 weeks feeling a lot more doable, and then 50 weeks. Have your stance changed on that over the last years?
Yeah, I think it was, I used to have, and I think a lot of people have this kind of perception of prep as being in your off season, you gain, maybe have mini cuts here and there. And you're kind of doing this, like it's linearly, you're going up in the long run with these intermittent down phases where you're kind of chipping away to gain for more time. And then like your peak off season body weight. So now you're at your fattest, furthest away from stage condition. And now you start prep. I think that's what a lot of people view is like, that's bodybuilding. Like you build up as big as possible. You take your gaining phase, your improvement season as large as you are. And then you come down from there all the way. And that's prep. Whereas I don't know, I think Mike Israetel introduced to me the idea of like, when you start a bodybuilding prep, you should look like a bodybuilder, like you should look somewhere close. You don't start like a, otherwise you're going to need loads of breaks in between and you're going to get fatigued. And I think there's also some research kind of touching on how much metabolic slowdown there is when you lose over 10% of your body weight. When you start losing over 10% of your body weight in one chunk, you start seeing real metabolic slowdown. So your fat loss efficiency per se really starts plummeting. You have to go into a larger and larger deficit, you have to consume fewer and fewer food to still get that same deficit. So you have to just essentially try harder to still lose at a decent rate. And like you said, it's individual, like all of these things are very individual. But I think that is something that hits a lot of people. And so when you are peak off season and a lot of people get like 20% over their stage weight, that's not unheard of. And then you're trying to lose 20% of your body weight in like one run. I think you can do it the way Jeff Alberts does it. And I think his prep, a lot of that time probably doesn't look like what people would think of as prep, because he has like multiple refeeds and diet breaks relatively frequently. And so he's at like his genetic, like ceiling almost. He's very, very close to that. He is not likely to grow a ton. So he can afford to take it really slow. He's got a family. He can take it really slow and make it really comfortable and make sure he's maintaining all his muscle mass and kind of doing it in a sustainable way for him. But I think for a lot of competitors, they want to get back into their improvement season and they want to be improving for as much time as possible because they've got loads of muscle to gain again. So, and for some individuals, just knowing that they're in a deficit, like you just are never out of that. Even if you have those diet breaks, you're not like fully out and you still feel like you're just in this period of time where you're not improving. So yeah, I prefer to get someone kind of down, get a lot of fat off, like, okay, at peak off season, you're kind of in a really easy position to lose fat. So you like, can kind of strip that off. It's really comfortable, really easy. Like I said, kind of that honeymoon fat loss phase. And then once you get to that point where now you look like kind of beach lean, maybe you're as a male in that kind of low teens to 10% body fat, you've got some striations coming through, you've got some detail coming through, you look like a bodybuilder now. Now you can afford to take a bit of more time, start improving, maybe improving weaknesses like we did, where we focused on some areas. We're like, okay, now we've cut down, we can see where we've got some muscle groups that could really do with improving, like your hamstrings, focus on that area, glutes, build those up as much as possible, which isn't going to be tons, but we had a fair chunk of time to emphasize those areas, build your calories up nice and high, make you feel great at this lower body fat. So now it's like you feel just as almost as good as you did peak off season, but now you're much leaner. So now you have such fat loss efficiency coming into the contest prep. We have lots of energy. You feel good. Hormones are in a good place. So you don't start feeling just super run down and beat up. I just think of it like, I don't know, if you're traveling from Europe to Australia or something, stupidly long journey, to do that in one go, it just doesn't happen. You have to stop off, refuel in like Dubai or whatever it is, and then you go again. And you kind of, so you have to do it in two chunks. So I think for fat loss, there are, yeah, it makes sense to split it up a little bit. And it makes sense to start a bit leaner. So that is kind of my preference for a lot of people. And I mean, some people, for example, for me, I haven't done like a double pump prep this time around. I did last time, I was planning to last time, but for me, what ended up happening was I just ended up getting kind of too lean too soon. And then I was trying to maintain a body fat that was maybe a bit too lean, and my timeline just was messed up. So this time around, I've just made sure not to quite go as high in my peak off season body weight, keep a bit leaner, and then I'll do it in kind of one prep run. So I kind of had like a mini cut a while ago to kind of clean up, and then I've built up. So I think it's just essentially where I like people to be is in shooting range when they are starting true prep and they're looking to maybe lose between 10 to 15% of their total body weight. Not like 15% plus is just way too much for me. I prefer closer to 10% of their body weight. And then for the prep, I like them to at least have 1 week for every pound they're looking to lose. We're looking to retain as much lean muscle as possible. You don't want to be losing it like 1% of body weight every week. That's pretty aggressive. So especially as you're getting below 10%, you want to be losing closer to 0.5% of your body weight per week. And then as you're getting kind of leaner and leaner, it might even drop below that to a point where you can't even necessarily identify on the scale and you're just looking at visuals. Mm. So if you can have at least a week for every pound you're looking to lose, or more time than that, that probably is going to give you sufficient time. So a lot of people, that'd be like 20 pounds, 20 weeks, 25 weeks, up to 30 for some people. And I think if you're doing it, and I think for us, because it's the first time you're doing bodybuilding, having a bit more time is probably better than having a bit too little time, because I think we were weighing it up to whether we wanted to start a bit sooner or a bit later. Mm-hmm. And it was just a case of, I think it's going to be a bit less stressful and that's going to suit you better, having a bit more time. Whereas, I don't know, for me, I don't have like kids. I've done it before. I've done that. You didn't think about it like driving a journey. Like if you've never done the journey before, better to give yourself a bit of buffer. Yeah. If you've got kids in the back that could stress you out, probably a good idea. You might have to stop off and take care of them. Whereas like me, I could be on my motorbike or something, not that I own one, but imagine I did. I've done the journey before, so I can just like go full throttle and it's not such a concern for me. So yeah, that's where the individualization also comes in. So probably a lot of people, their prep might look anywhere from anything less than 15 weeks. I start to think that's quite a short period of time. Maybe it's just someone who feels really good lean. And then anywhere up to like 30 weeks for kind of new timers or people who have a bit more to lose or kind of a stressful environment. I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, that should be a good ballpark where you should can think about what time you should consider when you think about prepping. At first, at least in the most cases, a coach is the best investment you can get for your first prep for sure, and probably for every prep, since you are losing your objectivity at some point nonetheless, or someone you can interact with or talk about.
Just because you mentioned that, I need to send Pascal a message. I've been in meaning to do it because I've been thinking about prep this time around, and I just want to message him and be like, am I okay to really lean on you this time? Because last mm-hmm. time I didn't really lean on him that much. I leant on more probably Broderick and Jared. I was consulting mm-hmm. with them, which I don't intend to do this time. I'm also not sure they want to necessarily do it just because of how things have changed. Not that they're like, I'm still friends with them. It's just, I think they're more big time now. So they just don't have the time to be able to do that sort of thing with me. But I need something, like you said, either a coach, and I'd considered if Pascal isn't able to kind of say he's happy to do that, I'm definitely considering just getting a coach for it. And I realize I'm that awful person that's like giving that coach the like limited amount of time. So part of me is like, I might be calling it too late, but thankfully maybe I'm one of those special individuals where hopefully I have my shit together, so I'm not putting a coach in the lurch where I'm just like, a coach would be like, oh yeah, Steve, that's great, rather than fuck, Steve, you're giving me not enough time here to work with you.
Yeah, exciting. Looking forward to what will happen.
Hopefully Pascal would be like, no, it's totally cool, but I also realize I'm not like paying him to be my coach. He's just there on in my corner, and I mean the rest of Team Revive Stronger as well, but it's not like, you know, it's nice to just have that person that you can just be like, for sure, what should I do?
Yeah, for sure. That my first prep in 2015, I did all on my own, just with what was it called, Dr. Lane Norton's contest prep guide. I don't know what's it called. It worked, but I never know where I was standing in the process. I have no idea.
It's so hard first time round.
Yeah, I had no idea. Everything worked out quite okay. But yeah, this time will be completely different, for sure. So yeah, from the time, I guess we was negotiating if we probably should go for another massing meso before we started, and then as you mentioned, we was thinking about having more time. First timing bodybuilding would be definitely good for us, and probably having the option to eating into the show. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. So this is something that a few people have, I don't know if they've all come to it from the same place or if some people have named it something else from this originator, but I think the original kind of person who talked about like eating into the show was Dr. Joe Klimgeski. I think that's his name. I can't say his last name very well, but people might know Dr. Joe. He was like one of the OG natural bodybuilders and then coaches doing things evidence-based. And I've had him on the podcast actually ages ago. I should get him back on. this is actually where I can get some of my accountability, talk to all the prep coaches and be like, what did you do in this situation?
Yeah, perfect.
It's not me.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. So this is kind of his peaking strategy. He would see competitors doing all these wacky peaking protocols and he'd even tried it himself. And he's not a big fan of the harsh deplete and like rapid backload or whatever it is. He doesn't like those kind of harsh approaches. He thinks like building into the slowly building calories up, slowly refilling glycogen. I refer it to being like a bucket. You're kind of depleted and low and you're slowly trying to like build up. And what happens then is also your training goes better. So you maybe regain some muscle tissue, your glycogen levels a bit bigger and higher. So your kind of pumps are better, your training performance is better, you look better. And you can kind of get to this point where you're kind of edging your metabolism back up almost. It's like a reverse diet during your contest prep almost. So it's like an ideal way to do it where you're just slowly building yourself up to maintenance or even like hovering around maintenance. But like you said, you can only do this if you get ready early. So if you do plan in an extra 5 weeks, maybe you'll need them to get that lean, or maybe you'll get lean 5 weeks early. And now you can go into this kind of metabolic building phase. I think he called it that. I think Alberto Nunez has called it like a bodybuilding taper. So I think people think of powerlifting tapers where you kind of make things easier as you lead into the powerlifting meet to reduce fatigue and feel better and perform better. It's kind of like that for a bodybuilder. Our fatigue is like glycogen depletion, low metabolic rate. And so by increasing calories, specifically carbohydrates, glycogen stores are higher, metabolic rate increases. We look better and better and better. And so that can work really well. And I had the opportunity to do it for myself in 2017 because I had no expectations of how I'd do. And I ended up qualifying for two finals. And I just thought I'd end up dieting to these shows and then that would be it. So then I was in contest shape. So I started building food up and I did it then. It went all right. I don't know if I just didn't have that much muscle. So I just didn't look as impressive as I would like. But certainly the transition into like off season then and into your recovery diet is much more comfortable because now you're already eating quite a lot. So it's not like you're eating barely anything. And then it's like, oh yeah, you're now in 1,000 calorie surplus. And so it's going from like, I don't know, 1500 calories to 3,500 calories suddenly. And you're like, this is a bit like scary. And it's easy to binge in that case, I think, because people are just like floodgates coming in. Whereas when you go from like 3000 to, or even like, yeah, 3000 to 3500 to 4000, you're already in quite a, like you're transitioning up to it almost, which is quite nice. So it makes that post-show period easier, makes peaking easier because you're not having to like deplete and replete. You're just kind of always looking pretty good. Some people do like to, even when you're in that phase, then deplete you and replete you because they're trying to get that, the super compensation of depleting and repleting, which I think is definitely real. You only have to look at Cliff Wilson and his clients to know that that is a thing. Definitely way more risky. It's kind of like a contest prep. Like if you haven't done it before, you maybe don't even want to risk trying it, or you give yourself more time. Like you use the safer approaches. So a reverse diet into like a show or the kind of metabolic building phase, it's probably the least, I guess, risky process because you have so much time to be able to do that. And I was just going to say, this kind of eating into the show, I keep naming it different things, but hopefully people understand what I'm doing.
Sure.
It was reinforced to me how great this is. And people might be able to relate to this when they finished a diet where they have got to like that 10% body fat. And you may even be able to relate to this just recently for yourself, Arne, when we finished that first phase of dieting and we started to just pump food up, just suddenly like, just you look leaner, you look bigger, like things are popping better, you feel better. And I found that when I was looking to compete last year and I'd got down to about 180 pounds. And I just, there was a period of time where my body weight wasn't really changing, but I was increasing food quite a lot. And my look just started looking better and better and better. And I know because I took tons of photos across that time, I was like, dude, like something good is going on. And that just reinforced to me, when you do get lean, like when you can start feeding that frail body up, things just look so much better. And that's why peaking works. But if you can have more time to really build that metabolism up, really build up any lost muscle tissue, you also, when you haven't had lots of glycogen, your body isn't adapted to storing it as well and using it as well. So when you can have more time building that up, your capacity almost increases for how much you can hold. So yeah, ideally you get ready early, which yeah, if we can do that, like, and I have no reason to think that we can't, apart from we don't know kind of the end destination perfectly as well as if we'd done it before, for example, but we know pretty well where we're going to be. And every month or every month initially, and then every week, we're no better and better how far we need to push you and how near we are to the end destination, which will be exciting.
Yeah. So for sure, if we're thinking about like this lower end of 15 weeks, like the upper end, like 45, when you can go probably to the middle and got that time, yeah, you got more options in the end. And yeah, you got everything in your hands. Yeah, you can do things about stuff that happening. And that's always a good feeling. And that's a feeling I always, for my personality, that's a really good feeling for me. I'm feeling really comfortable doing that this way. And that's why we are doing it that way. And in that regard, we are now pretty low in calories to the start of the prep. Yeah, when I talked about it a few episodes ago, where we are starting high days, low days, people were like, crazy. Oh, Arnie, why? That's crazy. Where are you going to like 1,000 calories in the end? I said, no. Wait a few episodes. We will talk about that. So can you talk a little bit about why we are starting that low? And what's the plan for the next weeks and months? Hopefully will change. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I know it's, I guess, in the general fitness realm, and I think we would say it as well, but we have more context and more nuance to this kind of discussion, where people are like, don't start all guns blazing. Don't start with the lowest calories, with the highest cardio, blah, 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 because where are you going to go from there? So I understand where people are coming from, where it's like, I mean, these are a bit low. Are you going to go lower than this? Which I get that, but there's low and then there's appropriately low. So something that people might not take into context is, I mean, for anyone, when they're starting a diet, they have more body fat than when they're going to end a diet. And when you have more body fat to liberate, you can diet at a faster rate because you just got more to give. So you've got less risk of losing muscle. So if we were to start kind of dieting really slow, it's kind of like, well, we could go at this pace, but we're going to go at this pace. And it's like, why are you choosing to go at a slower pace when we know we can kind of go faster and not sacrifice muscle, all of this stuff, at this period of time? So we're going at like an appropriate pace, which is a bit faster now, so we can slow down later. And that might mean we can build calories back up later. We can insert some high days, which would be ideal. Or it might, and I hope it doesn't go this way, where your body just adapts to the deficit. So whilst this deficit is maybe like losing 0.75% now, in a month's time, it might start, you're eating exactly the same, you're doing everything the same, but now the body's adapted, so you're only losing half a percentage of your body weight per week. So your calories might not have changed the whole time. Your body just adapts downwards because you're smaller and metabolic adaptation is a real thing. So you're kind of burning fewer calories. So that might happen. Or we might find that actually we're losing at like 0.75 and we're like, we need to slow this down. So now we can insert a high day, or we can just raise calories for the whole week. So your weekly average is higher. And this is what I hope happens, because like, that's always ideal to be eating more food. We just have to play it by ear. But essentially it's come fast out the gates almost is what you could term it, because we can go fast. Then slow down as you're coming towards the end, because prefer to be fast now when you've got all that fat to liberate, versus at the end, and especially for your personality, but for anyone, if you're like, I don't know, 4 weeks out and you're like, man, I've got 10 pounds to lose. Whew, good luck losing 10 pounds in 4 weeks. Like, that's not going to be comfortable for anyone. So yeah, start fast so we can slow down later on, and then we can have more food, or we can reverse into the show, like you say, because this is when that's going to be most important. Whereas now you can take it, like it isn't like a, it doesn't hurt right now. Whereas if you have to be in such a deficit later on, that will hurt and that won't be comfortable. So that's kind of the theory behind why it looks the way it looks.
Yeah, and I didn't mention, probably some people just heard it, the series the first time. On training days, I'm on like 2,200 calories, and on non-training days, like 2,000 calories. So that's where a lot of people say, oh, that's pretty low. So where are you going? We will see how that work out. But another thing I have to mention is that since we are got the baby, the life completely changed for me since then, plus the pandemic and stuff. So I'm still getting my 10,000 steps a day in now, required, yeah, for the prep. But the time before when we are massing, I was like at like 3,400 calories a day for massing and stuff, and that was going down since the baby's here to like 3,000 calories, like 2,900, 3,000 calories. And people was like, oh, that's also pretty low for bulking and stuff. So how it works out pretty well. And I guess a lot of people got the misconception that you have to bring calories as high up as possible when you're in your off season to maximize your potential. And I was like, then why should you do that if you don't need that much calories? You have to eat it, you have to buy it, you have to digest it. Yeah, that's all capacities. If you can build on lower, I guess that's not a bad thing in my world.
It's absolutely all relative. Like, you'll get someone like, I know Alberto Nunez, like, he has to eat so much food. And he has to eat loads of food in his prep as well. Whereas I know, like, Eric Helms, for example, he doesn't need much extra food to, like, start gaining. He just start gaining and, like, seemingly doesn't really adapt up. But he does adapt quite harshly downwards and has to go quite low. Like, so for a lot of competitors, going to, like, 10 times their body weight in pounds isn't unheard of, like, at all. To even go below that sometimes to get kind of the last bits of fat off, sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes it even like breaks what you think for thermodynamics. You're just like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, your metabolic, like, your basal metabolic rate should be 10 times your body weight in pounds, and you're doing all this exercise, like, what is going on? But I know, I think Eric's talked about it before, where some people just have to go there, which is unfortunate. So yeah, like you said, it's completely relative. Like, you can't compare, like, even if you compared you and me, similar body weight, and similar, if we had similar step counts, my metabolism just, it does ramp up. Whereas I know yours, just, you've never had to push calories to stupid points before, but I think you also tend not to have to ramp down too much either, which is just more steady. And there's just individual variability for that. So like, people might look at what I've done and, like, I don't know, I'm on like 4,000 calories to gain weight now. But I tell you, I'll have to quickly bring my calories down to probably near 2,000 to start losing at a reasonable pace. You think it wouldn't, like, that's a huge deficit, but it won't be, because my body just ramps right down. I have no idea why. I hate it, but it will. So you have to essentially, that's where people have to forget kind of the books and what they hear and what's happening in real time, what's actually happening here, because it might not match what's happening elsewhere. And that's important, because people can screw themselves over. Because, like you said, if they're just force feeding and putting calories up, and they don't need it, they start gaining just tons of fat. And that's no good.
Yeah, for sure. Some people have to do that. That's individuality, as we mentioned now, as you can see. To change topics a little bit, from nutrition and body composition to training. As I mentioned, all the people know, I'm transferring to bodybuilding now. When we start working together 2.5 years ago, I was thinking, okay, what will Steve do? I guess, okay, what will we do now? Do we do some special stuff and specialize and stuff and did this and this? And in the end, tell the people what we are doing. At the start and all the time, probably, to build the physique I got now, which I'm quite happy with from that time.
Yeah, I think specializing is definitely a tool people can use, I think people tend to use it too soon, or they just have preferences that they just end up doing it. But for us, and for a lot of my clients, and for me as well, I don't specialize, not yet anyway. I only think specialization comes from a need, not necessarily, well, for bodybuilders, I think it comes from a need, not necessarily a want. And we had capacity to bring everything up, and we didn't need to focus on specific areas. So the kind of, I guess, scientific way of describing this is that your systemic MRV, or rather your individual muscle groups MRVs, wasn't larger than your systemic MRV. So we could fit everything in your recovery capacity. We didn't need to specialize. And also just, yeah, from your physique, there was no inherent need to just focusing on specializing. There was no muscle groups that were just like, this looks ridiculous on your physique, so let's leave that at maintenance. There are strong points and weak points, and everyone has that. But I think people think bodybuilding, and then they think, and I actually heard Judge talk about this recently. He was kind of saying, think like balance. But if you just balance everything by bringing up your weak points to like just be as good as your strong points, like you want as many strong points as possible. So bring everything up. If you have two physiques and one's like balanced, but everything's weak, you don't want that. You want a physique that's like, it's got some strong points, and yeah, sure, it's not as balanced as that other person, but if they're just weak all over because that's what they've been holding themselves back to, that's not going to bring the best. So yeah, it's just, we've been driving growth through everywhere, and taking every muscle group as best we can to its own MRV, or slightly breaching that for overreaching purposes, and just continuously looking to improve our ability of auto-regulating, getting in quality volume. And yeah, it's just a process of continually doing that. And it's surprising how much you learn, like month to month, meso to meso, how you can just get more out of everything that you're doing. And I think for most people, specializing, and I think it will start becoming more important for me and for you, Arne, and for more, some of my more advanced guys, where once you've had like a decade of lifting very well, and you are nearer your genetic ceiling, and like just muscle growth is clearly slowed down, that's where specializing will become more important, to bring up kind of certain areas, because otherwise you could maybe grow everything quite slowly, but you might get more out of really focusing on specific areas and then focusing on other areas, because yeah, otherwise you just could hold yourself back. But yeah, for the large majority of people I work with, I don't specialize unless they specifically want to, or if it's like specific to their class. So if they're like men's physique, we might not put so much towards the legs, especially if they're not fussed about it. Or if they're like a female, like bikini, then obviously way more onto the glutes, much less onto the upper body, things like this. But for the most part, like it, you don't inherently specialize.
I like to call it like set priorities before you specialize. Yeah, you can, that's what you can do first, priorities like in your exercise order and stuff. That's what we are doing in the last like 2-3 medals before the prep, where we are prioritize the shoulders more, the hamstrings, the glutes. That's the first step always, I guess, which makes more sense than completely specialize.
There's definitely levels to specialization, which I don't think people consider. They just think, okay, so specialization is take everything to maintenance volume and then just put one muscle group on like MEV through MRV, like push that one forward. But that's like the last step you take. Like you said, the first step can be exercise order. You can also do exercise selection, potentially. That can come into it a little bit. You can even just do it like, what's your first session after your rest day? Because that session is probably going to be the best session of the entire week. And then you can start. And I guess I do this a little bit with people without them realizing, where I will be, maybe they're recovered enough to do a bit more, but I won't put as much emphasis towards certain muscles. So for a lot of guys and girls, I won't put so much volume towards abs unless it's clear they need thicker abs for whatever reason, or they've said that. I'll just be like, you probably don't want to waste a ton of time and effort putting too much volume through your abs. Let's focus on some other areas. So yeah, then you can start, like, you could potentially hold some muscle groups back at MEV, or you just go MEV up to MAV a little bit, and then you're like, right, I'm going to push these ones to their limit now. So you can work within that sort of thing. And that's definitely something I do, where we don't blast your arms like ridiculously. We get them to a point where we're getting great response, and it's like, right, if we're going to focus on other areas, we want to grow other areas because you have amazing arms. So there's no point necessarily now. They're already very, very strong. So yeah, there's definitely levels to specialization that you can go to where, yeah, even you could take half your body and keep it at MEV, and then the other half you move up. So yeah, these are some of the things that you have to do, or you might experiment with when you're getting more advanced.
For me, it's in the coaching process, sometimes for me, it feels like auto-regulated. As you mentioned, my arms, they are good body parts, and I absolutely hate training them, but I'm probably pretty good at getting them activated per set basis. So I just need... the last time I looked, like, we got like four to five, six sets of biceps a week, and that's good, that's fine, like that's auto regulated. If I say I'm good with two sets of biceps curls and I'm done, so you don't have to think too much about up and down with the volumes and stuff most of the time if you're in touch with your body and know what you're doing. That's a little bit of auto regulation in a lot of cases with my clients. I said, okay, yeah, for sure. When we are looking at men's physique, and now we are going to bodybuilding, what was your thinking? I have to work the most on muscle group wise.
Yeah, I think men's physique kind of probably found you in a way, because your upper body, I think, just given, I don't know what your training kind of past, like, I can't remember now if you focused on legs very much, but you have longer limbs anyway, longer femurs as well. Anyone who's listening who has that will know it's just more challenging. A lot of the movements don't come as naturally. They're more awkward, less comfortable. So it takes a while to get comfortable and settled into finding movements that really give you a great stimulus for not tons of extra fatigue as well. So for you, legs, I mean, having, like, it makes sense that you did men's physique, because legs were always the point where they just weren't as strong as your upper body. Like, you have a very thick chest, like, great arms. Shoulders are really good, but they don't look as good just because your arms are amazing. So we just look to bring those up to that. And back is equally not a weak point, for sure. I'll say abs were probably an area we wanted to thicken up a little bit, for sure. But it was mostly, like, the upper body was pretty good. We just wanted to keep that going a little bit. And yeah, the lower body was where we had to think more about kind of making sure that we're getting the stimulus there. And I think over time, and it takes time, and it has taken us time to find movements that really fit you well. And I think it's just learning your body. And like you said, auto-regulating, getting the quality sets in. They've definitely come up and grown a bunch, but that has been the more challenging area. And I think that was, and I see it a lot with clients who just, and I have ones who even come to mind where I see them, like, they do anything, they squat, they do a leg press, they do any movement, they do a pendulum squat, hack squat, and it just, everything looks like, wow, like, it's perfect form. You sink super deep, everything looks amazing. And I have other clients who, they're just, anthropology isn't built for, like, leg training and having, like, really deep positions, and their lower back starts rounding way sooner than you'd expect on, like, a hip hinge and things like this. And it's just way more challenging for them to build those areas up. So they tend to have weaker like legs, because they have to they have to think a lot more about their technique and exercise selection. Whereas you see a lot of people with just massive legs, you're just like, they're just built for leg training. So I think, I don't know if you have seen that with your own clients, Arne, or if you'd agree.
Yeah, for sure. That's a lot of work to find those exercises and those movements. That's the biggest, or the most, the first step at hand when you're getting someone like that. And yeah, if once that set, you can work on the quality on those ones, and then the ball, it's getting rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. And that's why we are getting better and better, I guess, because we are training longer and we are more experienced, and per rep quality grows and grows and grows and grows. And I guess that's the most, how's it called? That's what you need the most when you want to be a successful bodybuilder over a long time. Always try to learn and to get better at that, for sure.
Yeah.
And I guess, that's what I'm doing now since 13 years. And hopefully at the same time, my goal is to train till I'm 80 or something.
Yeah.
That's my goal. Everybody knows that. That's my ultimate goal, and let's see how that works. So from the prep wise, we are now 3.5 weeks in. We are losing at an appropriate pace we are expecting. So when it comes to diet breaks and stuff, what are your thoughts on that during the time till the first competition? And what have you probably changed your stance on that over the last time?
Cool. So one last point just on your legs. I don't know if this will be interesting for people or not, but you have a similar kind of the way that your muscle, your quad in particular, inserts. It's not your traditional kind of sweeping quad that bodybuilders crave. And there's lots of people that have this where it's just kind of like, it just juts out and it does, it's just like thick, but it doesn't sweep. And people want to see that, like that aesthetic sweep. And I don't have that either. I have the same. It just kind of like, my legs are just big and thick, and I'm just like, but they're not aesthetic, but they can be made. And this is where our posing is going to come in. Yeah. So this is where we're going to work to make the legs. Like, I've been so surprised how you can just tweak some leg positions where one that might work for someone who just has those really kind of sweeping quads that look great might work for them, but we have to be a bit more careful about how we place our legs and things like this. So I just thought I'd mention that, because I think sometimes, like, I don't know, even for me with my arms look super impressive. I don't think they're necessarily miles bigger than a lot of people, but the insertions are just great. Like, I just insert really low on my bicep tendon and really high, so it just looks really full. And some people I think can have like great, like your legs probably just equally as impressive as someone else's, but visually they won't look it just because of the way the muscles insert. So we have to be, that's where posing will really come in, and this is the art kind of a bodybuilding, which I'm excited for as well. With diet breaks, diet breaks have been something that I've been interested in for a while, because as a coach, you're always looking to make the process of contest prep or a diet as easy as possible, but no easier, I would say. Like, we're not looking to make prep easy. It's not an easy process, but don't make it any harder than it needs to be. So diet breaks were really cool, because with the Matador study and things like this, we're seeing better fat loss efficiency. So you would take a break every now and then and you'd see better fat loss kind of rates than if you didn't take that break, essentially. So for whatever reason, it seemed like your metabolic rate was being more sustained, or and you weren't losing to metabolic adaptation as much. So you're kind of getting those benefits. But Jackson Pios kind of burst every coach's bubble in a sense, because he had a very well-run study on diet breaks. And from that, the conclusion was more so that the effect was psychological more than physiological, in that we didn't get better fat loss efficiency. So you just got less hunger. People experience less hunger. So for a lot of bodybuilders, I think they'd prefer their prep to be done sooner and to get in and out faster. And that might provide a better result than being less hungry during it. Because I think in a prep, you're inevitably going to be at a certain level of hunger, and it kind of gets to a point where you can accept the hunger. So you might just decide, all right, I'm actually not going to take this diet break, or you decide that you're going to auto-regulate kind of refeeding periods. So when kind of, I don't know, you want to slow fat loss a little bit and you're starting to feel a bit run down and beat up, you take like 3 days of just refeeding. So you kind of use those more intermittently. So for me, diet breaks were something that I used to just every deload, I'd diet break. Part of that was obviously this kind of fat loss efficiency. And part of it was also thinking that potentially there was some muscle loss and you wanted to kind of refill glycogen stores to refuel you for like another training block. I think there's something to that. And it still makes me a little bit uncomfortable to take someone through a diet break, for a deload and just not kind of consume maintenance for any of it. And it's a whole week of like easy, light training. I don't know if that's kind of, we haven't got the anabolic stimulus from hard training. So especially when someone's lean, to take them through like an easy week of training, even though it's just a week, do we sacrifice something there? I'm not sure. I don't think we'll ever know or get data on that. Probably just come from anecdote after a while. So I've definitely got into a position where I might, rather than giving someone a whole week, I might give them like at the start of a diet, we might diet through the whole thing. And then the next diet, the next deload, we might kind of do a couple of days at maintenance. And then the next one, we might take 3 or 4 days at maintenance. So as we're getting leaner and leaner and we're getting further and further diet fatigued, we can take more and more days at maintenance to try and kind of bring appetite into a better position. So hunger levels aren't too high, and then potentially get any of the kind of mitigate any of the potential losses of muscle, if that is a thing. So yeah, I've become much more, I guess, individual and auto-regulated in the way that I approach refeeds and diet breaks. And they're definitely way less of a just absolute prescription. I think they probably are better, and I have had great success with them. So I have to say, because me and Pascal will talk about them on the improvement season, and every time we've spoken about them, I have very positive experiences with myself and clients, but he's always had slightly negative experiences. So some people, it might increase the hunger, it might make them binge, it might kind of cause them to go off the rails. Whereas for other people, it might stop them. You might give them a diet break just before they're about to kind of get excessive hunger and things like this. So I think in general, I'm starting to favor more refeed periods. So where we might just take like 3 days of refeeding, or like a couple of days of refeeding mid mesocycle or something, if someone's feeling really beat down, especially for competitors. And then you can also use that refeed as like an opportunity to look at how they responded to those carbohydrates, how are they looking. So I know in our outline for your contest prep, I have deload and maintenance built in, but those are not necessarily definitely to be taken. They're more just like security blankets where I'm like, if we maintain during this deload week, then cool. So that won't be such a problem. But yeah, that's where my thoughts are with them at the moment.
Yeah, so in the end, we probably know much more about the mechanism, and in the end it's probably come down to psychology for the people we are working with, how they work, and how they react to those timelines and before and after, and then yeah, you can use that. So that the only goal to interview today was to estimate when I can think about the first diet break. So it will be a longer time. No, that's right now, as I mentioned, I'm pretty fresh, pretty good to go for, yeah, I don't know, let's see how long we can get through it with that huge deficit or appropriate deficit now. Yeah, great. I think that was a great insight from the other perspective of this prep from the coach. On your end, so when is your prep starting?
So my prep, I have this week is my overreaching week, and then final week of massing. Next week I have a deload, and then I have a week off work and off the gym. It's an active recovery week. I think I'm going to go do some hiking stuff, so it'll be a really nice relaxing week. To then the next week after that, prep will begin. So yeah, like 3 weeks. Which is kind of nervous to say it because I haven't got 30 weeks like you have, Arne. I've given myself a shorter window, but yeah, let's see what I can do.
The big question, what are your goals for the season?
So I guess as every bodybuilder probably has this answer, they just want to bring a better package than last time. I also would like to, I definitely want to qualify for finals with, I don't have shows that I definitely know I'm doing yet. I had planned out to do the UKDFBA. I very likely will do the UKDFBA. The WMBF, UK has now talked about, and I think they're going to release soon when their show is going to be. I'd love to do that one as well. So I'd like to do that show too. I may even do a BMBF qualifier and show as well, just because why not? I haven't been able to compete with them before, so it'd be the first time I compete in the BMBF, which would be pretty cool. And yeah, if I can qualify for as many finals as possible, get into a final and then maybe even place again in a final, that'd be great. Last time, my best has been, I would say the UKDFBA is a little bit more competitive. So I placed fifth in an international final for them. I came third in a final for the MPA, but they're way less known. And I don't think they tend to draw as many competitors. So I think probably my best kind of performance has been fifth in an international finals in the middleweight class. So if I can beat that, I'd be ecstatic. I never thought I had the potential to go pro, but I don't want to nocebo myself almost into that. I want to really think maybe I can, maybe I have that potential. So I just have to see though, because I'm very honest with myself and my potential. So I just want to bring my best. I don't know if that I answered that very well, but yeah, ultimately, sure. I just want to, yeah, be proud of what I took to stage.
Okay, and the goal, I the last time, a few weeks, a month ago, to compete with all the other Revive Stronger guys, is still going ahead. Pascal, Jess, everybody.
So that kind of goal got very much flipped on its head because of just everything that's been going on.
Yeah.
And also Pascal's had some, he had some health issues. Mm. So I have no idea what Pascal's really thinking. I have a feeling he might have ruled prep out of his head. I'm not sure. He is dieting right now. So like I don't think he was out of bad condition either. So it depends how that's all going. So you could probably ask him. I'd be interested to know what he'd say, actually. I haven't asked him for a while. But I think he's a bit like, do I want to diet that lean when who knows if shows are definitely going ahead? I think he's a bit nervous about all of that. I think shows will go ahead. I think they will. So Jess is definitely, she's on like, well, she's right now recovering from some surgery because she got like a horrible buildup of an injury on her hand. So she had to have some like nerve surgery in her wrist and in her elbow. So she can't train upper body for a number of weeks. So we're just training lower body and still in prep. So she should be competing this season. I think, I don't know if she's going to come over to the UK and do some shows. I know that Z and her are likely to do the Dubai WMBF show, which Jess is trying to get me to go and do, but I don't know if I'll even be ready for that one. And there's just so many UK shows that I'm like, I don't know, do I want to go all the way to Dubai? But yeah, I think there will be a UK show that, especially the WMBF, because I know Z wants to do a WMBF show. Jess, I think, will do that UK WMBF show as well. So that's probably the one where you'll get the most kind of Revive people, especially if you end up coming over for it as well, yeah, depending on how things go. There'll be a lot of us there, which would be pretty exciting.
For sure. We will see how Germany is going. If they don't go that well, that will be a lot of work to do family-wise, because, get everybody over there. Probably need to manage that. But we will see. Steve, thank you for your time. Where can people find your content I mentioned in the beginning and stuff? Where can people find you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. Like Arne, it's been a pleasure coaching you for the amount of time I've been able to coach you. It continues to be an honor and like a pleasure to coach you, like just to say that. And thank you for having this chat. Hopefully it's been interesting for people. And yeah, if people want to learn more about Revive Stronger, probably our website is the best place to go, revivestronger.com. We have like our coaching, we have the podcast, we have everything over there. If people want to keep up a little bit more with me, they can actually join the members site because we have weekly vlogs that go out on there. They can get all the old ones on YouTube, which people seem to be confused that they're a year old now or something. And then I'm over on Instagram at Revive Stronger as well. So they can kind of, if they want to catch up with that sort of content, they can there.
Great. You can find everything in the description or the, I always get that wrong. That's like podcast number 150 or anything. And in the end, I always think about what is that? YouTube is it just a description? And what is the podcast stuff?
Also, yeah, I don't know, actually.
Yeah, in Germany, it's like two terms and I always get it wrong. And in English now, completely confused. But the listeners get it no matter where you hear it, iTunes, Spotify, or just watching on YouTube. You can find everything below. Yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. And yeah, take care, Steve. Thank you for your time. And yeah, let's keep this prep running. See you next time.